This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Prince of Queens, and we're going to be discussing the recent debates and Democratic presidential primary. Great having you on.
Oh, hi. I didn't hear the last question, but hello. I'm Prince of Queens.
And I'm also joined here with Matthew Pegas.
Hey, good to be back on the show.
Prince of Queens, you host the show on YouTube, The Gatriarchy, and You were involved with that scene that was... It used to be called the left, and it's also sometimes called the realist left. Do you want to give some background information about yourself?
Yeah, well, the thing about that is, so I had been entirely living in alternate reality of far leftists living in New York City, Seattle, and San Francisco who didn't actually follow politics at all in any way for about 10 years. This would have been about 2005 through 2015, and it was very deliberate. There were some things that happened in my life that became really difficult for me to deal with, and so I stopped following politics. And ultimately, it was because nobody around me followed politics at all. They didn't know anything about what they were talking about. And so when I tried to talk about politics a lot after George W. Bush was reelected, which made me very angry, turned out everybody around me was just entirely clueless. And I got really, really frustrated because there was lots of people calling me crazy conspiracy theorist and stuff. And they, a lot of them were my friends, and they truly believed it just because they didn't know anything about anything. So I made the veritable mistake of unplugging from politics entirely. I would purposefully avoid talking about politics. And I focused on my electronic music production and my writing work and my theater, performance arts stuff entirely, and was surrounded by these, you know, far leftist wackos who were, you know, of the Bay Area variety mostly. And they were really stupid. You know, a lot of them were Marxists, most of them were feminists, that type of crap. And I always knew that they were dumb, so it wasn't hard not to talk about politics, because every time they kind of brought it up, it was like, okay, it took about 30 seconds for you to say something that I know is untrue. But the thing was, is that despite the fact that I knew that they were full of crap and that they were saying untrue things, I still figured that somebody in the left must be really, really smart. Somebody must know the real true way that you're supposed to do these things, and that would work, and that they make sense, and why feminism is really good, what feminism really is. And, you know, I just haven't really met that person, even though I knew thousands of people. Well, that was me being particularly naive, but I started to get the memo when the 2016 election campaign was picking up, and there Sanders was saying all of the exact right things for what these people have been claiming to want the whole time. And yet, you know, although a lot of people really did support Sanders, a whole bunch were just like, no, Hillary Clinton, you're a misogynist. Ah! And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, what is actually wrong with these people? And so, you know, I ended up researching more about feminism, and now I'm a veritable almanac about all things feminism. And I eventually after the election, ended up really, really researching the history of the Marxists in the United States and things like that. And I realized it's all BS. Like, it's not really good. And everything I really liked about Sanders was just me being naive. And I also learned more about his character, and I hate him now. Like, it's kind of funny how much I think, like, everybody is starting to realize that, you know, he's just kind of a fraud that happened to have a coincidental moment where the Overton window shifted right around what he always was his entire life. Because, of course, he's never changed. You know, he's never...
some people are saying that he's changed in this election as opposed to where he was last election. But you're saying based on how he has always been, not so much whether he's changed or not.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is about last election was that I think he was trying to come out of the incredibly divisive and racist Obama years by offering himself as a non-racist alternative that wasn't trying to desperately divide us with identity politics, because that's what Clinton was trying to do. But he didn't actually get to campaign against Trump, because Clinton was such an overbearing obstacle for him that he only really ever spoke much about her. But now it's turning out that, you know, that now that he's really competing against Trump as his primary obstacle, he's just, you know, he's doing the same type of race baiting as everybody else. And but ultimately, overall, he probably would have done that, because I don't think that there's really much that's different about his character at all compared to last time. Because he's always saying the same crap, and he's been saying the same crap since, you know, like, talking about the 1% and bank bailouts and stuff. Since, like, 1992, you can find footage of him doing that. So, yeah, I kind of went through this period of wanting to salvage something out of the left. And but, you know, I stopped identifying as the alt-left as soon as it became a code word for Antifa. The right actually started that, you know, similar to the way that Hillary Clinton totally destroyed the label of alt-right by saying it was all like Pepe Nazis or something. She did that in a speech, and prior to that, that wasn't the case. And then all of a sudden, everybody thought that it was the case. And then all of a sudden, the right-wing people, like on Fox News and stuff, responded by saying, oh, yeah, well, what about the alt-left? And then they meant Antifa. And then the Antifa people started taking over the groups, like the groups that, you know, like there was one that I was admin for, and they started coming in and being all Antifa. And one of the tenets that we...
these were the Facebook groups. Remember those?
Yeah. One of the tenets that we valued was freedom of speech as a principle. Now, that didn't mean that we were necessarily not banning people from our group, because we would. And in particular me, because I didn't have any patience for it. I was mainly, you know, doing stuff on my YouTube channel. And I would meet these really, really dumb people who would be like, well, we live in a patriarchy. And I was like, no, we live in a corporatist society that is, you know, controlled. And women actually have more rights and blah, 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 blah. And people would be like, oh, my God, it's like you've never heard of feminism. And I was like, okay, I have no patience for you. Get out of my group. Bye. And that was me being a bad mod. Like, I told, God, what's his name? The guy who went by Thomas Ryan.
Ryan England, right.
Yeah, I told him, I'm like, I shouldn't be the moderator anymore. I don't think I'm doing a good job, because I don't have patience for this crap. And but then, you know, I was still sort of respected as a moderator-ish person, and then the Antifa started innovating, and they knew what they were doing. That was the weird part. Like, they demanded to be able to be included because of free speech. They called it Freeze Peach, and they kept, and it was like, no, you guys, you can't let these people take over the group, because they're going to try, and they will take it over. And there was that dumb chick, what was her name, like Zayna, and she was like, no, I don't know, I think that it's a good, and then, like, they fucking ruined her, kicked her out of her own group, and, there was no recovering from the Antifa takeover of the thing that we used to call ourselves, which was explicitly not Antifa. You know, it was like the reverse.
So the term the realist left is basically what it's become.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's like, that's okay. I don't think that, that's not what I would call myself. Like, I'm not a leftist anymore. I'm just not, like, I'm some sort of weird, my friends, at this point, you know, to be honest, most of my friends are right-wing gays. But when they sometimes try to call me a conservative, but I really push back on that label for many different reasons. Like, a big one being that I think that feminism is a conservative position. It's basically just asking men to do what they have done throughout all of history, which was prioritize women. And I don't think that there's any fair way of saying that that's not a conservative position. Things like that. But then, you know, I go back and forth so much that I like to just say that I'm a radically specific centrist. Like, I have such a specific view of all these different things that it's unfair to categorize me on either side. But I'm not, you know, one of these people that doesn't have opinions the way so many centrists will try to do, you know, and just be like, I don't know, I think the left and the right are equally as bad.
Have
and
you I'm heard like, of that term that's been kind of affiliated with this show called the alt-center?
Yeah, I have. And I like a lot of those people. Like, those people are cool to me. But I, anybody who says things like the left and the right are equal is bad, those people bug me, because that's just not true. The left is 10 times as bad as the right now. And I'm not gonna, like, not call a spade a spade. You know, the left is terrible. They're like, let's get into the debates now. Can we do that?
So you would say, basically, out of all the candidates running, you would say that most of them are either leftist or corporatist?
Or both.
So if you could break them up, like, which ones are more leftist, which ones are more corporatist, and which ones would you say are equally both?
So, okay, good examples of ones who are probably equally both to a certain degree. Okay, I would say Kamala Hairspray, that's what I call her. I think that she is probably someone that is equally far leftist and equally corporatist. Like, she's the type of creepy ass, like, Google Soros corporatist leftist, you know? She's a real problem, and she's probably going to be the finalist. And then someone like Elizabeth Warren is undoubtedly, you know, somewhat in bed with the corporations, but at least she makes an effort to try to, like, pretend she's not. Say she's, like, corporatist light. Joe Biden's just a full-on corporatist, clearly. I would say, whoever, the, like, what's his name, like, Julian Castro or whatever the guy is?
Yeah, he's, yeah, like, whatever. He got so much, and it's insane how much time they gave him, considering what a minor candidate he is.
He's insane! But yeah. I don't even know... I don't know if he has ties with the corporations or anything, but, like, man, that guy's nuts. Like, everybody just let it slide that he said that trans women should be able to get abortions. Like, think about what that means.
Right.
Can we think about what that means?
Didn't he misuse the term even? So, like, didn't he call trans men trans women or something?
Maybe, but he didn't clarify, and nobody was, like, you know, had the courage to be like, wait, sorry, if trans women can get abortions, that means that, like, we get technology to make them artificial wombs or something, and then they get a baby and they decide they want to kill it. Like, is that seriously?
Yeah, no. He did, he performed pretty well in the debate, but I don't see him going much further, because, as you said, he's pretty crazy, so I don't see him as having much appeal.
Well, it's kind of amazing how, you know, like, we already have some hints about who the Democrats think their base is, and it basically boils down to women, of course, and then people who think in terms of the identity politics of the Obama era, where, you know, like, everything has to be about Black people all the time, and then people, and then apparently the other voting base is just illegal Spanish-speaking immigrants.
Yeah, well, that was one that really stood out with Beto speaking Spanish, and
he wasn't the only one, though. Message.
Yeah, a lot of people
did. Booker as well?
Yeah, a number of them did. I feel like one or two others did. The first night was especially bad with that crap. It was just like, you know, really? Like, you guys are, you know, because it's like, it's so clear, if you actually really follow the border situation, that that there's at least a coalition of Democratic politicians, as well as, you know, corporations and people who back them, that just entirely want the southern border open. They don't care how dangerous the journey is for people. They don't care about anything. They're trying to decriminalize.
Yeah, they do that poll to see who supports healthcare for illegal immigrants and who supports decriminalizing it, where it's only a civil infraction rather than a criminal infraction. And basically, it was all unanimous.
Yeah, and they're, like, basically, like, you know, with the people on the southern border, I don't exactly remember what I was going to say. It might come to me, but, you know, it just seems like, okay, everything, but this is a number of, this is, has happened to me so many times because I follow, you know, things very, very closely, is that, like, so many of the right-wing, quote-unquote, conspiracy theories are just totally true. Like, they're totally true, and that's one of the reasons why I no longer call myself a leftist. Like, everything they've been saying, like, oh, that's just make-believe from the far right, it's like, no, it's actually true, and I did my best to not believe it for several years. Don't tell me what I know. And one of those things is this idea that the Democrats are the ones that want illegals coming across the border, and then they get their votes from them. And it's like, well, you know, if it looks like a duck, it's like,
yeah,
because they're trying to legalize voting for them, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And one thing that I, pertaining to this, one thing that I'm interested in is whether or not, and I hope the answer is no, but I think it's an open question, whether or not the kind of moral baiting about kids in cages and the border situation in general, whether or not that's compelling to any swing voters. Because I think the Democrats think it is. They think they can get a certain number of at least maybe female swing voters by appealing to this.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Because hopefully, and this is what a lot of right-wing pundits and like Breitbart and stuff would say, is that they're making a disastrous mistake there. And that, for example, one of the funny things I saw was the New York Post, which isn't right-wing, but, you know, which is funny and real a lot of the time. Their cover said, you know, who wants to lose the election? And they put the picture of everyone raising their hand.
Yeah, I don't think it really appeals to swing voters, but the
I don't think so. I hope not.
The Democratic Party has gone way to the left in that issue, immigration. I know there's this whole concept called the Awokening. And Zach Goldberg on Twitter, he posts these graphs where he shows like the opinions of white liberals on immigration and racial issues have gone way to the left in the past 5 years.
Yeah, I read Zach Goldberg's article for the Tablet on that, which is very enlightening, and I think would point to the reality being that this, no, swing voters haven't changed on this, and it's just you know, food for the far left contingent. But it does make me nervous, especially with what happened in the midterms in 2018, where it wasn't a blue wave, but definitely there was some pretty good turnout in a lot of sort of middle class income suburban areas shifting to the left. And I think this is an issue that people in those districts care more about for whatever reason.
Yeah, it could be, but I mean, now is the time that we're also facing the issue of the actual border crisis. Like, that wasn't happening in 2018, but now it's ramped up like 10 times as bad.
Absolutely. That could go either way, though, because it's also like, why didn't Trump prevent this? I mean, I still think that people who are concerned about the border will vote for Trump, but at the same time, I'm not sure. It doesn't make either party look great at the moment.
No, but the Democrats obstructed till the bitter end, and like they obstructed it with everything they could. And even now, $4.6 billion was finally allocated to the southern budget for the Center for Border Patrol, and I believe also to build the wall. That's what it was originally supposed to be for, and they aren't even admitting it. Like, you have to comb through mainstream media to even find that this happened, and that's absurd. And it's because they just don't want people to know how awful they were. Like, how you know, we all remembered Nancy Pelosi and skeezball Chuck Schumer sitting in rooms with Trump while the government was shut down, telling him, oh, walls aren't effective. No, we don't need the wall. And it's like, okay, and then they turn back around and give him $4.6 billion, like, a year later, practically. Like, screw you, people. You people are monsters. And I think the only people that are being swung by this are just the, you know, typical hysterical white women that, like, look at a picture of a crying child, and then whoever says, I want to make the child stop crying, they'll vote for.
Yeah, no, I agree. I really think that's the core demographic. Me and Robert, actually, we were going to write an article... Or Robert was going to write an article for Tacky Mag about, we didn't end up writing it, but it was about how people in these districts are kind of swung by, especially females in these districts are very swung by moralism.
Well,
we call it
like
a bourgeois moralism.
That's the candidates who are more effective, because that was basically what Kamala Harris did in the debate.
Yeah.
When she went after Joe Biden on his record, She even said, like, I was a little girl and I was bused into schools, and she used that. And she's probably... Cory Booker does that as well. He did that when... Those two candidates use that tactic the most, sort of emotionally manipulating them, because she's a former prosecutor, and it's basically a lawyer tactic.
Yeah, and yeah, it's really a heinous thing to do, because like I hate to white knight a little bit for Joe Biden, but like because I hate him. Like I
really sorry to interrupt. Can you white knight for a male? Is that a
thing? Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I'm an MRA. Once you get to become an MRA, you make jokes about white knighting for anyone.
Okay, gotcha. That's funny. But, continue. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, that was unfair and uncalled for. Like, it was so cheap because, you know, what she did was basically, you know, bring up the fact that, like, act as if the politics in the literal 60s were as simple, like, we would see these things as simply as they were today. Like she was talking about, like, why didn't you change the federal government as what, like, a congressperson? Like, what are you talking about? You know, like, he was supposedly, according to her, he was supposed to federally outlaw segregation, which didn't happen for several years. What, single-handedly?
And the thing is, she wasn't even, they're not talking about, like, segregation that was practiced prior to the Civil Rights Movement. They're talking about busing, which is when, that was when they forced students to go to different schools, or to bring in large numbers of students from one area demographic group into another. So that's a totally separate issue. But yeah, the left will just use the buzzword segregation as a tactic.
Well, she was basically, you know, trying to simplify the issues of yesteryear as if they would be seen as the same. And of course, you know, the soccer mom easily crying, literally shaking America is just going to look at her and be like, wow, she's so brave. You know, and then she has to just bring up the fact that she's black and act like she takes this personally, and it's totally below the belt but effective, and it's sucks. It's not, you know, like, knowing that we have someone who's willing to do that to come after the establishment frontrunner with everything she has right out of the gate. That's what makes me think that she's at least going to be able to beat the other Democrats, likely. Because also she's the only one that's intersectional, you know, and that's what ultimately the Democrats still care about. They still care about the identity politics.
It's really scary to see that happen. I mean, another person that I don't want a white knight for at all, and in many ways he's one of my least favorite candidates, is Beto O'Rourke. But Julian Castro attacking him, you know, it was also, it was in a way dismaying to see. Just for me, because I think that's going to be the future, definitely of politics in the Democratic Party, but also politics generally is, you know, basically white people getting attacked by intersectional candidates for not being supportive of their identity politics enough.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be the future, though. I think that this might be the last time that really works, because I don't think that they're going to win this election. I think Trump is going to absolutely hammer them. Like, whoever, the only person that could, like, hold a candle up against him would be Tulsi Gabbard. And it's pretty unlikely that she's actually going to get the nomination, though she actually did do really well. She was the person who grew the most in terms of, like, searches on Google and everything after the debates. So that's at least really good for her.
So you would say that Tulsi Gabbard is the only candidate you would support, that you like?
She's the only one that I wouldn't, like, cry and think it was going to be the end of the world if she won.
Do you remember, well, her main issue is foreign policy, non-intervention. I remember she talked about, she said when she was a soldier in Iraq that she would literally give her life for her LGBT soldiers. And then Cory Booker said, well, that's not enough.
I don't know what more he expects her to give, but
she's good. She actually is the only one that is able to actually bring up the things that Trump does wrong, which is his foreign policy stuff. And she's not a feminist. She's against censorship. There's all these good things about her, but people like she's incredibly likable, and she seems presidential. You know, she doesn't seem like a crazy person. Like, Kamala Hairspray seems like a prosecuting attorney. But, you know, you hear Tulsi Gabbard and you're like, oh, okay, you know, like, this seems like somebody who's an actual leader that people would come around and trust.
She really is phenomenal with regard to that. I mean, We'll talk about Andrew Yang more, I'm sure, because I actually haven't read it, but I heard you wrote an article or made a video about him. But I was initially very much part of the Tulsi, not part of the campaign, but, like, she was my candidate. And then I got kind of sidetracked by Yang. But, of course, with the events of this these past few days, Tulsi is, again, looking more like the outsider leftist candidate, or not leftist, the outsider Democratic candidate to put, you know, resources behind.
Yeah, the realist Democrat.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
she's a realist, and yeah,
she's great. I mean, she gave a really great answer when they tried to ask her, like, what would you do about women being paid less or something, you know, something to that effect. Her answer, she was just, I don't even think she said the word woman. She was like, I'll provide infrastructure jobs. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's, for me, that, like, just that. I mean, the norm is for people to bring up identity politics and things like that in response to questions that have nothing to do with it. And to flip that on its head and give a very pragmatic answer to a question about identity politics, for me, is, like, worth donating to Tulsi alone.
You're not going to find a legit veteran who's actually, like, a feminist.
Yeah.
They don't exist.
Yeah, because to speak of the terms of the quote-unquote realist left, I mean, that's when going to war, even if it's an unjust war, is going to give you a pretty hefty reality pill. And,
and
she has her priorities straight.
And seeing the way that men, veterans, you know, like, you don't really get the same type of female veterans as you get male veterans. I mean, first of all, they're not nearly as many. Second of all, they're not in the combat roles. To see how they get treated once they return from their terms, you can't just be a feminist if you have any integrity at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I actually really like her. I want somebody that's going to challenge Trump on his actual problems and who's actually going to challenge him to act like a better person during debates. I mean, if it's just Kamala hairspray trying to, like, come
it's
at
gonna
him.
It's
going to
be
like
all the Russiagate scandal.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Well, if it's Kamala Harris, it will either be the Russiagate scandal or calling him a racist.
Well, then why didn't... Okay, no, I think it's going to be border crisis stuff and calling him a racist. Because why didn't any of the Democrats... The Democrats didn't actually bring it up at all. And it's because they know it's a hoax. They know it better than anybody. They propagated it.
Yeah, that's stupid. I mean, obviously, the whole idea of Trump being a racist is really... It's really stupid and absurd. But the thing... If you're going to criticize Trump, criticize him on the grounds that he didn't deliver on the economic populism and try to win over his... those swing voters in the Rust Belt who went for him.
Which I'll say, I'm not a huge fan of Bernie Sanders either, but I do think he struck some good notes in other candidates. I haven't actually watched all the debates yet, but from what I saw, maybe Elizabeth Warren to an extent as well, did hit that note where they pointed out that he did fail to deliver on some of his promises to working Americans. So that was one thing that stood out.
Okay, but here's the thing. I don't think that the working Americans who voted for him feel that way. I think that The left fundamentally always misses the point when it comes to the trickle-down economics question. They always think that trickle-down economics is somehow going to lead to, like, the big corporations somehow, like, giving tax breaks to their workers or something. Like, they think of it in leftist terms. But the thing is about trickle economics is that's not what it does. That's not what it's supposed to do. Trickle-down economics strengthens these strong businesses and corporations domestically so that they have more job openings for the citizens. And that is why people like it. And that is why it works. That's why the thing is, when people talk about Reagan and they talk about the trickle down economics that didn't trickle down enough, the conservatives never give a crap because they're like, well, all I know is that I had a job during that period. And then as soon as Clinton came into office, I didn't. So, you know,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, they try to attack Trump in these ways, like, no, they didn't. Trump didn't lower their taxes; they paid more taxes. And the conservatives are like, yeah, because they was making more money, idiot. Like, it just doesn't work on conservative people.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been to the Midwest recently, so I can't really take the temperature from my own experience there. But what you're saying is, you think that Those areas where, as Andrew Yang would have pointed out, that Trump really won the election on, you think that your impression would be that they're at least decently satisfied?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, Trump's like, everyone loves to talk trash about Trump's tariffs with China, but it has caused Chinese companies to open up factories in the United States and for United States businesses to, you know, open up new manufacturing jobs domestically to a certain degree. And, you know, that... it's not something I follow super well, but I do follow the commentators and the supporters of Trump pretty well, and yeah, they're happy with what's going on.
Yeah, I follow Breitbart pretty closely too for that reason, just to kind of get the general tone, and it seems like there is some degree of optimism. Whether that really trickles down across the whole spectrum of the economy, or whether it's just, you know, people who are Republicans anyway, I'm not sure.
So, you know, this whole disappointment with Trump, you think it's more confined to the alt-right or the dissident right?
Oh, the alt-right hates Trump. I mean, I don't even entirely believe that the alt-right is actually a thing. Like, I don't, it's to the point where it's like, okay, really, are you all just a bunch of fake accounts that we don't know who generated them? Because the alt-right is so incredibly vague, they'll never actually say what they're all about. Like, they sort of will, but then if I make a YouTube video about them, after like trying my best to carefully hear what they're talking about and everything, I made three now. Every time they're like, oh, you just don't understand the alt-right. It's kind of like, oh, is it like intersectional feminism? It's totally simple. But every time you hear an explanation, they try to say, you just didn't understand it. Shut up. You know, and they don't like Trump because, he actually isn't a racist, and they sort of hope that he would be. And, there's a number of things that they tend not to like about him. You know, like David Duke came out and for some strange reason supported Tulsi Gabbard, which is almost inspires me to think that David Duke is not actually somebody that really has any real opinions, and that maybe his paycheck every 2 years comes from endorsing people, but you know, like just to smear them or something. Because like, why on hell would he support Tulsi Gabbard? That makes no sense.
I mean, he has some weird views about, well, no, I would keep say that topic for a different show, but yeah.
Well, there was a lot of dissident right support for Andrew Yang.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that. But a lot of people compare his supporters to astroturfing. Like, they say that there's Andrew Yang supporters, which are like bought and paid for. There's people who are legit Andrew Yang supporters, and then there's also far right people who are trolling as Andrew Yang supporters. He definitely has an internet niche going, but there's definitely a distinct possibility that that's basically all he really has going for him.
You were telling me that you don't actually support his UBI proposal. You said that it would actually harm small businesses. My impression would be that a lot of the revenue would go into these areas that are economically disadvantaged. Are you talking primarily about the VAT tax?
You know, okay. I have not really overwhelmingly looked into it, but we're not ready for an UBI. I used to really be in favor of this type of thing, but it's going to be a number of years. Like, there's going to have to be, like, it's not something that we can put into law right before we get all the self-driving cars and crap like that. It's something that is going to have to come by necessity after we have that. It's not, you don't pave the way with it, you know? The thing is, no matter what will happen, small businesses won't be able to compete. Like, the amount of taxes and that type of a thing, like, it's not like the small businesses aren't going to get taxed. He can say that it's going to go to the corporations or Wall Street or whatever he's saying, all he wants, but corporations and Wall Street can lobby for that not to be the case, and that would be one of the first things that would be overturned. What Andrew Yang would do would create, America would be two classes. It would be the poor class and the corporate class. And in order to get ahead in any way, as one of the people living off the $1,000 a month, you would have to start working for corporations. And it would ruin everything that's great about our nation.
I can see that. I mean, I think that there's an acceleration aspect to Yang, where he would say that the country would turn into that inevitably with the, you know, with the rate that Amazon is growing, et cetera. And this would just be a way to basically do it in a way that would create the least chaos, and which may be a bad thing in a certain sense, because maybe there should be some friction caused by this.
I don't think that I'm ready to give up just yet.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I mean, I also have a inkling that there's something going on, that he has sponsorship from somebody who would benefit from destroying our economy, but that's not, you
possibly
know,
Chinese or what?
Yeah, it's, yeah, maybe, but I mean that's conspiracy theory stuff, so I don't want to, but it's so suspicious the way everything is with him. You know, he has this like weird fleet of trolls, and he is so, one of the things I really pride myself in is having a pretty strong BS detector, because, and this just came from, like, my family was really brutal. They were, I got lied to by everyone all the time when I was a kid. It's a complicated story, but every member of my family always lied to me. I was the youngest. Everybody thought that, they had no idea what I was thinking, so, and they didn't know if I saw through their BS, which I actually did pretty well, so I always grew... I never felt like I could trust literally anybody. And then I was in theater stuff, like all through my young adult life, through very early period, when I was very young, you know, like before I was 10, I was in like little productions and stuff. And then this is the kicker. This, I ended up being a drug addict for that period when I was not involved in politics at all. I was using drugs all the time and like actually, you know, like buying cocaine and heroin and stuff all the time. You learn to get a really good at sniffing BS after all those things together. Andrew Yang is not to be trusted. But that's not something I can really explain. Like I could go through a video of him and like talk about his body language and the way he says things. But he's, think about how nervous he seemed during the debate.
Nervous. Although, to me, that's more humanizing than me. I don't know. Continue. Yeah.
Well, I will say that he was robbed in terms of speaking time. Like, he was by far the most ignored candidate.
Yeah, he was the very bottom of a lot of time. And that's considering that there's candidates there that no one's even heard of.
Yeah, yeah. There was, like, that author woman who is just, like, wacky and, you know.
Oh, I didn't even see her parts yet, but I know who you're talking about. The self-help, everyone should go to therapy.
Marianne Williamson.
Yeah. She's a weirdo. Still though, Yang, he did not come prepared and confident. He came as if he was like trying to slip some stuff in or something.
Without a tie.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. Yeah.
Care about the tie thing, but it ended up not being
the thing
a great
is,
look.
My impression...
It would have been a good look if he'd been confident, but... It ended up not playing well.
Yeah, my impression of Yang is that he's someone who's very kind of mild-mannered and he plays by the rules. And that's more kind of like that's accustomed to maybe like a high school or college style of debate. But this, the formatting, it rewarded the candidates who were more aggressive and who would interrupt other candidates.
Yeah,
and
like Yang, the candidates that would make the best used car salesman, you know, and Trump is no exception here. No. Routinely do the best, which sucks.
Trump is he's great at debating in the same type of way that the Democrats are. Like, you know, Kamala Harris was up there bullying Joe Biden. That's the only fair thing to call it. She was a bully. She was using her power advantage that she had as a black woman to just, you know, punch down on old white men. And that is the actual power dynamic that we have in our nation. Trump does the same exact thing, and that's why it works.
Yeah, that's interesting. I want to ask, sorry for diverging from the like the outline at all, but how much, Prince of Queens, how much do you like Trump, or how much of a Trump apologist are you? Will you be excited?
A Trump apologist, that's really
okay, sorry,
that,
I don't mean to put it that negatively, but how much do you like Trump? Are you going to be enthusiastic to vote for him in 2020, or do you even plan to vote for him in 2020?
I'm not sure if I'm going to vote for him, but I feel like I'm going to have to. The way that I describe my feelings of Trump is that considering what he's up against with literally all of the Democrats that are actively conspiring against not just him, but the American people all the time and just getting caught red-handed over and over and over, I can't exactly hate the guy that holds his own against him.
Yeah. I agree. For me, the events the last few days, and we'll see how these campaigns play out. Again, I was a Yang supporter, am a Yang supporter. I like Tulsi Gabbard as well. But I mean, for me, the last few days, it's like, okay, time to really start looking hard at Trump again, and realizing what is good there, and the fact that even if he hasn't fulfilled all his promises, I don't think he's nearly as slimy as pretty much any of these Democrats or most Republicans. There's still things of value there. And yeah, I mean, for me personally, it's not a great feeling, but maybe I could come around again to be more optimistic about it. But for me, it's like starting to think about what it means to be a Trump supporter again, I guess.
Well, so many people don't really like him and really are annoyed that our nation had to go in this direction. But you see the Democrats. I mean, Trump's bringing up building a wall almost, 4 years ago now is when he was actually, it might have been 4 years ago at this point, like that he was actually starting to talk about it. And
yeah, good God, that's crazy.
And you think about it and it sounds crazy. Like it sounded crazy at the time. Like I was like, who is this guy? What is he even talking about? And like people were like, it's just racism. And it sounded plausible enough to me because it never occurred to me that that was going to be a thing. And then, by Lord, like we get to four years later and we have the record breaking of all time people crossing the southern border illegally. The Democrats are doing everything they can to keep it open. We apparently there was just a leak that this is not verified. Like Tim Pool very much emphasizes that this might not be true. But Google is in on whatever is going on. Like Google is the worst of the worst. Like they are, total resistors and they lie all the time. They have done hell to me. They put me through hell with my channel. They demonetized me. That's just all this crap. They're monsters. And apparently they have, they've encouraged their workers to go to, anti-Trump protests and everything, and given them chance to sing, and one of the ones is like something like, I think it's "No Trump, No Wall, No USA at All."
Yeah, that's an Antifa chant.
What do you think about that new bill by the Republican senator from Missouri about holding tech companies accountable in regards to deplatforming? Will they have some kind of status where? I think the way it works is if someone commits a crime on their platform, they're immune, they're given immunity. So it would strip them of that immunity.
No, you got it wrong. If anybody commits a crime anywhere in public, the police is already it's within their jurisdiction to go ahead and go after that person. This would not change that. The platform would not get in trouble for somebody committing a crime on their platform. Like if somebody decides to try to solicit sex from a 12-year-old on the telephone, you don't come after the phone company. So they wouldn't do that. The thing is that Congress gave Facebook, Google, and maybe Twitter, maybe some other probably just those immunity from the burden of having to declare yourself a mutual outlet. And they gave them a good faith promise. The outlets gave government a good faith promise that they would balance their stuff neutrally. And I think the reason that they did that is just because it's so complicated to try to determine, are you being a biased platform? And so they just figured back whenever this was, I think this was during the Obama years when these companies were starting to become really huge, that they would just give them that immunity because it never occurred to them that they'd start actively trying to rig elections. Well, now we have pretty undeniable evidence that they have been trying to rig elections. And so the idea is just to take away that immunity. Now, the problem with it is, and this is actually a pretty big problem, it wouldn't be a problem immediately, and it would probably lead to Trump winning. And if Trump was in office, everything would be fine. Is that how are you going to determine what is political bias? Like, who makes the standards of that? Right now, it's the social media companies, and they are the most biased people of all. So what would happen is that you turn it over so that it's actually the government can intervene and say, no, that's not what we think is
fair. So would this have any impact on deplatforming?
Well, let me finish. So the government will be the ones that are saying, hey, you're being biased. And what they will do is they will appoint the FCC to be the arbiters of what is biased and what isn't biased. But that's not as simple as it sounds. The FCC is a government agency. So while Trump is in office, they will go by the standards of Trump. And like, honestly, Trump doesn't care what the left says about him. He never has. He has an incredibly thick skin. People try to say he's thin-skinned. That is the biggest lie ever. You know, when a Democrat gets in office, they could load the deck and have the FCC fall full of partisans trying to say that Republicans are, you know, biased on the platforms, or the reverse, or like some wacky Republican authoritarian could do the same thing after Trump is gone. So if it's going to be a solution, and I think it would be a solution for now, it's only going to be a temporary solution that could lead to a lot of problems. But I think that we're probably going to have to go with it because the companies are so bad.
When you were on last time, we were talking about the last election and how the SJW crowd preferred Hillary. They favored Hillary over Bernie. What candidates does that crowd favor in this election?
You know, they technically kind of hate them all. SJWs are very, very hateful people. They don't like anyone.
Yeah, I'll say that I still have some SJW Facebook friends, and they don't like Kamala Harris, which is a surprise. I mean, I feel like there's different groups of SJWs now. There's slightly smarter, I mean, I don't agree with them, but slightly smarter, more Marxist SJWs who are more woke. And they don't like even people like Kamala Harris. And then mass of, like, corporate, just, like, average liberals who have adopted SJW tactics.
Maybe just call them woke capital apologists.
So,
yeah, woke capital versus Antifa. All these things are related but different. But, yeah.
The cult of ContraPoints versus the cult of Kamala Harris, maybe?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that they really like anyone. And that's a thing, you know, and the thing is, the real progressives last time did actually like Sanders, and a lot of the SJWs like Sanders, but the problem was they didn't actually know anything about politics as a whole because they're stupid. They're not smart people. They just heard, you know, like free stuff and his history with civil rights. And then the other bunch of people, like all the feminists were a lot more dumb and overconfident, and they just thought, they thought that feminism had already taken the world over the world before the 2016 election. So they thought that, you know, they were going to be on the right side of history just because the future is female, and that's as simple as it was to them. Well, we've realized now that everything's a lot less simple, and now they don't really know what to do, and they're all trying desperately to like actually pay attention to issues because that's what they didn't do before, only to find out things like that, you know. Kamala Hairspray was actually a really, really tough prosecuting attorney, a district attorney and stuff that like put a lot of sex workers behind bars, so they don't like her for that and things like that. They don't like Joe Biden because he's an old white man. They don't really like anyone, and that's why I don't think the Democrats can win this election. The best chance they have is Tulsi Gabbard, but these people are so stupid that they don't go searching for information. They only wait for what falls into their lap, which isn't a lot about her.
Yeah, and even if we do get, I mean, I still think Tulsi could be the candidate because she could win more reasonable people, but SJWs just don't like Tulsi for some reason. I think it's a lot of reasons, but like, you know, a more socially conservative past, a more pessimistic.
The thing is, they're accusing her of being socially conservative, but she's actually not. I don't really. If you look at her voting record, she's fairly liberal on social issues.
I think it really only comes from the fact that her parents were big, like, anti-gay marriage people or something when she was, like, 17, and she worked with their campaign when she was, like, 17, her parents, or something like that. It's, like, something really stupid. That's the only thing I know.
So out of all the candidates, do we talk about just about everyone? Let's see. We mentioned Beto briefly.
We didn't really talk much about Warren.
Oh, right. We didn't even talk about her.
I think that it's going to be between for president, it's going to be between Warren and Harris ultimately. Mm-hmm. Warren is not very likable, and that whole lying about her, you know, race forever is a horrible stain, you know. So I think ultimately Kamala will beat her. But those are my predictions.
I don't like Elizabeth Warren, but my very general impression is that there is actually a bit more depth to what she's saying than almost any of the other kind of front runners.
Hmm. Yeah, no, she actually has plans. I mean, and she's
exactly, she has plans. Yeah,
she's a smart woman who's been in it for a while. You know, she's been a senator for a long time, and she's actually dealt with things. I think her biggest obstacle is that she is kind of just a crazy lady, and she seems like someone's shrieking, angry aunt that would get mad at the store clerks at the grocery store or something. Like that's her attitude is what it seems like. You know. So she's not likable.
Yeah, she's
if I had to guess now who the nominee would be, I'd probably go with Kamala Harris.
That's what I would say, but you know, just what I'd say.
Yeah, my impression was Harris or Warren. The interesting thing is the Bernie Sanders question. I mean, I know that he's like technically like second to Biden right now, but I just don't see it lasting. Even though he continues to have a lot of grassroots appeal, he kind of sounds like an angry old man at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of directly answering the question, he just starts sort of ranting and yelling.
He doesn't seem like I really don't mean this in a terrible way. He seems like I'm not saying he seems senile, but his age is really showing. I think even more this time, and he just doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah, his performance was a lot better in 2016. I noticed that as well.
I think 2016 was his moment. I think it's a mistake for him to run. I think he should have fully endorsed Tulsi Gabbard.
Right. Yeah. Oh, the one we forgot to talk about, Buttigieg.
Oh, there's not much to say, actually, though, right? No. He was all right. He was all right. He was the only one who had a really good answer about the foreign threat from China. Like, somebody brought up the foreign threat from China. Yang got all nervous. Like, he's like, I want to talk about Russia. It's like, it's kind of weird. But the thing is about Buttigieg is that, like, all these candidates had just been like, oh, forget China. Let's conquer Russia or something. You know, that was kind of their tone. And Buttigieg is like, you guys, we shouldn't just throw out China as a concern. They are taking our stolen intellectual property and using it to perfect authoritarianism. That's a problem. And that was like a perfect answer.
Okay, I should maybe look more. I should watch all of the debate. I've never strongly disliked Pete Buttigieg. I think he's a little vanilla on a lot of his opinions, but he's respectable.
Yeah, I would say that he would be my second place to Tulsi Gabbard out of the Democrats. And it has obviously nothing to do with him being gay. I feel like it's been annoying that they've actually brought that up as much as they have. He hasn't really brought it up so much. And the people who are bringing it up are mostly the homophobic leftists who are using it to bash him, being like, oh, who cares if you're a gay white man? You still are oppressor. You know, like those people. Because yeah. Those people are everywhere. Like the left hates gay white men. It's a thing. It's
no,
that
that's
way.
An interesting phenomenon.
Their obsession. They don't seem to care that much about gay white men anymore. Their obsession.
No, they hate us. They actually attack us all the time.
A whole nother
either women. It's either women of color or especially trans women of color.
Yeah, no, even fucking Kamala Hairspray just today said it's the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, where the LGBT community fought back against police led by trans women of color. That is a motherfucking lie. Pure and simple lie. It was led by gay men. The two supposed trans women that were there that started the riot, supposedly one of them, Sylvia Rivera, wasn't even there on the first night at all. She had passed out on heroin in the park. Her friend said so in an interview where she also said, you know, Marsha P. Johnson, the black woman, she said that she didn't get there until 2 a.m. when the riot was well underway. Those that they were not the leaders of Stonewall. White gay men were. They led the entire gay civil rights era, like movement for gay rights. Everybody knows that. That's why Harvey Milk has a stamp. That's why there are no trans women of color. Everyone says it was whitewashed. No, they weren't there. Like those, they were two tokens that were marginalized because of their disrespectful, not just non-respectable demeanor. The fact that they were drug addicts, they're kind of crazy. They did start the first transvestite focused organization, which is, you know, that's a cool thing to know about. Another thing, it wasn't what Stonewall was about. You know, it was like less than 1% of what Stonewall was. And they tried to manufacture this blatant lie. And it's a racist, sexist lie is what it is. Mm-hmm. Try to write white gay men out of history. And we are the people who suffer for it today. The entitled little trans brats going around trying to attack white gay men all the time and saying, like, we're the ones who did all the fought for your rights. And they're like 17, you know, and I'm like, hey, well, I'm 37. Like,
yeah, no, it's thank you for clearing that up, because at LA Pride recently I was there and they someone was talking about all that, and I was like, I wonder if this is true.
No, but, it's the reverse of what is true, and I am one of the only, me and my friend Chadwick Moore, who goes on Tucker a lot, and we're just two of the people that are really, really focused on trying to clear it up, because it's a problem that they try to do that.
Yeah. So your podcast, or not podcast, your series is called Gaytriarchy, is that right?
Yeah,
that's really, I heard about it a long time ago. I should look into it more. Also, what you were talking about a minute ago, the kind of pushing of gay white men out of the intersectional equation is an interesting thing that's happening. And that if my theories about the contributions of queer men to society are correct, could actually be very beneficial to right-wing interests.
Yeah, it's really a shame because, like, these are communities that were exclusively built by gay white men. Like, if you go through the history books, it's not like there's any real question, you know? Like, the only time that lesbians even started in, like, first of all, lesbians hated us. Like, we're not us, them, the early, you know, gay white men. That was a thing. They tried to take over in the 1970s, but it didn't work. There's an old essay called Dangerous Trends in Feminism about feminists trying to take over the gay community. But it seemed pretty clear that, you know, that there were at least some guys who did fight back. But then everybody started dying of AIDS, and eventually some lesbians left to take care of them, you know, like, left the feminist movement. The feminist movement wouldn't deal with AIDS. So this narrative that feminists took care of dying gay men is actually the reverse of what's true. But, some lesbians did, you know, come and kind of start helping, and then eventually they made inroads and started taking over the organizations and started making money off of them. That did kind of happen. So that was really in the 90s when that started happening. It was still like white lesbians, you know, like this whole like trans women of color have always been there doing everything. That's just false. Like, where were trans women of color in the 90s? They were on Jerry Springer fighting a KKK guy in a robe or something.
I guess to kind of wrap up this show, I guess that will, the whole intersectional dynamic will be probably what shapes this election. Or at least the primary.
I would say that the intersectional situation is going to finally run its course, and it will fail, and it will prove that everybody's tired of that, and then the moderate Democrats will come back into fashion. We already saw signs of it, people demonizing socialism during the debate with Bernie Sanders, like people being like, we gotta like not be the party of socialism. They were directly attacking him about that, and it seems
so
like
you would
people
say economically you're fairly centrist.
Yeah, I am. I mean, you know, like, I'm definitely, like, there's right-wing people that would call me, like, a left-wing person, definitely. Like, there's certain things, for example, I believe that everybody with low-cost medical ailments should have programs for those things, you know, things like people with diabetes and that kind of thing, where it's, like, all they need is insulin, but if they don't get that, that's important. Like, there should be programs for that, programs for low maintenance, low-cost mental health problems and things like that. But I don't believe in like making entire health plans necessarily around those things, which is, it's sort of been this like all or nothing.
That makes sense. I guess that I see what you mean now by like highly specific centrism then. That makes sense.
Extremely specific centrists or something. I have all these very specific ways of doing things that makes me outside of both left and right. So,
well, we're at the end of the show. I would like to thank Prince of Queens for being on. It's been an excellent show.
Yeah, thanks.
And also thanks, Matt.
Absolutely. It's been a good conversation.
Yeah, good talking to you guys.
Yeah.